Welcome back to Genetically Speaking. This is your host, Eli Robertson. Last week, we talked with Luciani Carvalho. We're back with part two of our interview. We hope you enjoy. What sounds like there are definitely issues with access to education and the opportunities. And you do end up getting people in your lab to come from all different types of backgrounds, and that you try to give them as much of a chance as you can, as long as they want to do something that's going to be able to help people out and they really want to learn and do something good. Are there other problems that you've run into trying to help increase diversity, equity, and inclusion at the hospital or university where problems have come up, and how have you gone about trying to navigate those?
Your question is very important. Because I was listening to a podcast from a Black doctor named Julio Cesar de Oliveira, and he was talking all the difficulties of being a doctor that is Black. And it was very interesting because during his speaking, he told that he has a role model that was somebody that was successful. So then he didn't have too much opportunity, so he went to a medical school, a private medical school. He has to pay all the fees after being graduated. But because he has a role modeling, he decided to keep going. And all the opportunities he had, he just took for him. And nowadays, he is a professor at the university, and he was talking about this. Because if you don't have a role model, how you are going to move on? And he was saying that a person in his university, when he was graduating, was a role model for him. And now he is the role model for others. It's very interesting because he is very interested about bringing this kind of discussion, racism, poverty, into the university, because people try not to talk about this. It's something that's not a hugging pleasure, because at least in our society, we went from a culture that the Black people were slaves. And when they became free, they started having no position at the society. So we know now for sure that most of the people that are in prison, about 70% are Black people. And he came with a very new result that was published, that doing the demographic aspect of people that graduated medical school in 2018, 17% were Black. So we are far from having them included, but things are changing. And nowadays, we have some of those big companies that they have some issues that they need to be diverse, they need to have equity, and they need to have inclusion. So because of these laws, even because it's a law, but in some point, this is not going to be a law, because I believe that if we are going to be a better human being, this is not to be discussed in a podcast like this, because everybody accepts as a normal. So what I understood that when something is tough for you and you don't want to talk, it's time to be in contact with something. Because behind skin color or a physical defect or intelligence that's decreased, it's a soul, and we have to think in a passion to understand that they have their differences, but they are human beings, and then we can learn with the diversity and be better.
So talking a little bit about your research, you had choices you had to make, had done all your training. You came back, you decided that you wanted to go to public hospitals instead of being in a private practice. You chose to focus on more rare disease, and you actually see a lot of patients every week that have a more rare disease. To me, it seems like just because the disease is rare, it doesn't mean that it doesn't deserve attention and that the patients don't need help. So what made you decide this is really the group that you wanted to help? And what do you think that we can learn as a broader medical community from this smaller set of patients?
You know, I can tell you that I've never thought to be in this. The opportunities were coming to me. And my life changed a lot because when I entered into medical school, what my mom was expecting from me? To be a doctor, famous, make a lot of money, and have a good life. And that was her idea. But during the graduation, my second year, I realized that I loved endocrinology with all those very complex aspects. And in my university, we didn't have a student that can come to a lab and learn research while they are graduated. But I found out Professor Enigo Loni that helped me how to think about a disease, to think about how to write an abstract. She was somebody that helped me attention. And then I decided to do every kind of course in order to be better, because I thought that I was not good enough. I didn't have the chance to go to a public school. I went to a private one until my fifth years. So in my fifth years, became a public school. And I was not comfortable about saying that I was graduated in a private/public school. So then my dream was to work at the University of São Paulo and do medical school and do something with medicine at the University of São Paulo. But it was a long journey because I couldn't enter residency in Hospital das Clínicas. I did close to my hometown, that's Rio Preto. And then I had the opportunity to do internal medicine in a public hospital. And then I came back to Rio Preto to do the endocrinology. And at that time was public and not more private one. But I had something inside myself that told me, if you do not study molecular biology, you are not going to be able to treat patients in the future. So now is the time of changing your life. And then I finished my residency in endocrinology, and I discovered that Professor Berenice Mendonça was a very important woman, even recognized internationally, and she worked with molecular biology. And I came to São Paulo to ask her a position to do my PhD, because in Brazil we do first MD and then PhD. And then she told me, it's okay, but you are going to be 1 month in our lab to see if you are adapted with the lab and the lab is adapted with you. And after being in this stage, she came to me, okay, here's the paper that you are going to be your PhD. And I said, my God, what is that? Black 6, what is that? What a kind of strain? What is this? And it was crazy because at that time we didn't have this facility for using Google, PubMed. It's not so easy that way. But I was wanting to know what was going on. And then I was trying to learn, and that things become much more important for me as being a doctor. You know, doctor, it was like, okay, I have to be a doctor to make money. But what I really like is to discover all these new things in life. And I had the opportunity to find out variant that we know that now that is pathogenic. And I have people that could receive me. And then when I finished my PhD, I published in a very high level journal that was JCI. I was chosen in the Endocrine Society program. So then I went to Sally's camper, and Sally, when I came back, I didn't have money to get started as a principal investigator. She supported me with supplies, with animals. And Professor Berenice here told me, what do you need? I want to help you. Because I didn't know how to get money at that time. Now I am a machine hunting money. So that changed the way I saw. So being a doctor was just to pay my bills. But what made me feel very excited was the science. And then when I came back to Brazil, at that time, the same time that the one that won the Nobel Prize in 2012, Shinya Yamanaka. And I learned that we could change every single cell in the body in a pluripotent stem cell and then in any tissue. And then I thought, wow. And if I can produce pituitary, it's going to be very good, but I have no idea how to do that. So then I went to the American Society of Human Genetics meeting that was in Orlando. And during one of my the sections that I saw, they were talking about allelic variant, potentially pathogenic, in a gene related to autism, but they didn't know how to prove that. And then the new word appears in front of my view. So I saw the group of researchers changing fibroblast, becoming then induced pluripotent stem cell, and then turn into the three different layers of the brain. And I said, I want to do that. I want to do that because I can, in the future, change my patient's life. And I came back to Brazil, and I contacted one startup that was doing pluripotent stem cell, and they told me, well, we don't know how to change a pituitary from iPSC. And it has been past the 3 years till 2019 when I got my position as associate professor. And I asked my student, go and see if is there any protocol that we could do from some kind of cells that are somatic, and we can give them the opportunity to become stem cell and then try to produce as a pituitary. And she found the paper from Professor Studer. And I said, whoa, we can do that. Let's go. And she told to me, Lou, nowadays she says, Lou, I thought that you were crazy. You were crazy about coming to this meeting. But then I decided to enter in your crazy project. And then every time somebody very special come to our life, before getting to the pandemic, we make a contact with Professor Faranaki Fatai, that was a student from Professor Studo, and she was open to receive my student there in San Francisco. And then the pandemic came, and we had to wait 2 years and a half for my student to go there as a team, University of San Francisco, University of São Paulo, medical school, and we were able to do that. And from now, what we want to do is to try drug discovery, to try to correct the defect. So at that meeting in 2017, that was in Orlando, it turned my life again. So I'm very, very glad for being there. And that's why I accepted this interview, because I really, really appreciate the way you see science as a very important thing for the world, for people, and for everybody. Did I answer you?
Yes, I think you did. One of the things that you had mentioned several different times in different contexts is that you had all of this great support from your family. They helped you get through all the things that you needed to get the training that was required, but also that sometimes you come up against roadblocks that it seems like you just couldn't get past it. And every time that happened, a colleague or a friend or someone in your family showed up at just the right time to help you get through that. And now you're the mentor, and you've got junior colleagues and trainees who are coming to you. So what is it like now being the person that can help lift up other people?
You know, I feel that I am in the position that I can see this not as an obstacle, but something that I can do for somebody that has a soul, that has a family, that is a human being. So I can tell you one episode about the way I learned with my role modeling of being a mentor. I had a student. She came from a poor family. She got the opportunity to do a private school as a biomedical student. She got the opportunity to be part of a federal program that they took people from private school that didn't have too much opportunity to be abroad. And the government gave them 1.5 years to learn English, to rotate in different laboratories. And unfortunately, a lot of students just went out for tourism. But since she didn't have any other opportunity before, she got as something that could be changing her life. And she went to the university in Florida, and she came back. And then she came to me to be my student. And I realized since the beginning, she was a very good heart. She has a lot of issues with the family, but she was all the time very happy, helping everybody. And she worked hard, very hard. So I knew that she was going to be something, somebody in the future with a potential for being a very good researcher. And the opportunity came to her. But in order to move to the U.S. and live in San Francisco, that's a very high level, you need to spend a lot of money to be the minimum in San Francisco. Our government, they gave her a salary for a student, but not much for her to live close to the hospital. And this person, her name is Juliana, she never thought, okay, money is not going to be an issue. I will make cake. I will do brigadeiro. That's a very good candy. That's a Brazilian. But I thought, no, that's not fair. She's going there to study, not to try to survive. In 3 days, I'm fundraising 3,000 reais for her. That means about $500 extra a month that she could live properly as a student. And then I realized that that's something that all my role modeling were going to do for me. And it was the time to turn out and do the same. And next year, another student named Bianca, she is a single mom, and she came to me and told me, I want to do something outside. Do you support me? Sure, let's go. You were going to ask for a fellowship, but the fellowship is not much. And I gave her a necklace of gold for being ruffled to get money. And she went with her daughter. And she came back with a lot of knowledge to improve our science. So that makes really sense for me as being a supervisor. And I feel happy for being their scientific mom. And I can tell you that I learned this with Professor Berenice and Professor Sally Kemper. So I have good modeling.
Well, Luciani, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today about your life and your outlook.
It's a very big pleasure. And I hope that this can go to everybody that's without hope at this time, that you can find somebody that could help you. Just look for help, that they can come. Even I know that most of the students, they have problems with their thesis, they become very depressed, but that time is the time to ask for help. And I hope that this podcast can be a hope for somebody that's in trouble nowadays. So thank you so much for being here, for inviting me and giving me the opportunity for share what I've been through my whole life.
Absolutely. We were glad to have you. This has been Eli Robertson. Join us again next week for another episode.